everybody. Welcome back to episode 63 of Business Therapy, a show about exploring the intersection of mindfulness and business. Every week, we sit down with professionals from all walks of life to discuss how business success can always be balanced with a conscious and grounded perspective. This week, we're happy to have Cody on the show. Welcome, Cody.
Thank you.
So Cody is coming on as part of a family business, and he's going to talk to us a little bit about what it was like to grow up in a family business and start to work in a family business. So I'm going to go ahead and kick it over to you, Cody. Why don't you tell us a little bit more about your background and the business that you're bringing on the show to discuss today?
All right. So, I work for my family business. It's a Corvette restoration shop. We specialize in restoring Corvettes and also older, you know, muscle cars and street rods and that sort of thing. And we also do like standard collision repair. Like if you guys were to get into an accident, say, and your insurance were to cover that, we also do that side. And at the same time, we also do mechanical and performance work as well. So we kind of have three businesses under one roof. My brother works with us, and my dad. So it's the three of us. We've had a couple employees on and off. We had one longtime employee that recently left and kind of went out and did his own adventure. But the last, it's a year and a half, it's been just me, my dad, and my brother. So it's been an extremely interesting year and a half. You know, before that, we always had somebody else to kind of, you know, melt in with the family to, you know, have that. I don't, for lack of better term, an outsider, but it was someone there other than family that we were working with. So I've been doing it now. I'm 35. I've been full time for just shy of 20 years. I went right from high school, first day out of high school, it was my first day full time at the shop. And then from probably about my freshman year of high school, I was working there full time in the summer and then part time, you know, after school, I would go to the shop and have at it. And that was my education. That was me learning everything I needed to know.
What was it always was it a fait accompli? You were always going to go into this business?
Yeah. It definitely felt very natural for me. Like I remember when I was a little kid, it was always, I was going to be the one, you know, working at the shop and working on cars. And I never really looked elsewhere. I never felt the need to look elsewhere. It personally, you know, I've always just felt at home doing what I'm doing, even with how stressful it gets sometimes and how, you know, rough it is, you know, it makes relationships in the family. But yeah, it's my dream in its own weird way, you know?
And did you ever have another job? It sounds like you went in right after high school. So this is the only job you've ever worked and ever had.
I had one other, I was on payroll, so I can call it a job, but I worked part-time at a friend's beer distributor. And I did that right about when I bought my house in 2012, just to pick up some extra money and just get a, you know, at that point I was doing it. I was working at the shop for 6 years full-time and I felt like I just needed to get a little bit of something under my belt. But when you're working at a place like our shop, family business, it's really hard to branch off and commit to something else as far as a job goes. So, you know, just working part-time at that distributor, it just, you know, gave me a little bit more of the world in that way, you know?
Mm-hmm. So. And you said three businesses under one roof, but are they managed differently or it's all like, well, what makes them distinct businesses?
The way I look at it as, is say if you, you know, had a car that you wanted to get mechanical repairs or performance repairs done to, you would take that to a specific shop that handles that. If you had, you know, collision repair you needed to get taken care of, you would take that to a collision shop. And if you had an old car that you wanted to get restored, you would take that to a specific shop. We kind of do all of that under one roof. On paper, we don't have three businesses in one roof. It's just we all kind of have our niche. And me and my brother, you know, grew up under my dad's wing and he basically taught us what he knows. And he's always done everything, you know, and it started out, you know, he would work on his own stuff, and he learned how to do the mechanical stuff, learned how to do the body stuff, and kind of took it from there. And we did the same thing. So it's definitely unique. If you were to go to school, like a trade school for working on cars in some way, usually it's specialized in mechanical, paint, body,
got it.
You know, okay. that sort of thing. So we kind of blend a lot of work together, which recently, now that it's just the three of us there, we've been kind of throttling back some of those things just because it's tough to keep up. I mean, I've listened to your guys' podcast now for, I think I got like 15 to 20 under my belt. And, you know, one thing that I notice is most of the people you have
on. I guess that's okay. We have a lot more than that, but okay, fine.
Well, I just found out about this at Christmas time. So, okay. Give me a little more time. I'll get them all under my belt. I've been sharing it with a bunch of friends, so they're catching on too. But I've noticed, you know, within your podcast, most people you have on and most things you talk about, you know, there's efficiency in dialing in what you're good at and focusing on that and running with that, which we're now trying, you know, it's kind of hard to explain to my dad that all of this stuff that we're doing makes us less efficient, even if we're good at all of it. It's very tough bouncing around everything, keeping all the different, you know, the different walks of customers happy at the same time. So it's been a kind of a project for me and my brother to kind of help my dad get a grip on, okay, we're not turning away money by turning away some of these jobs. We just need to get better at being efficient and focusing on what we really, you know, shine at and walking with that, you know.
Which one do you shine at?
So I do all the paint work.
You're saying the company should focus on one area.
The restorations, I think that's, for us, it's kind of a no-brainer because you really get the, you know, the gratification from that. When, you know, the hard side to it is that these restorations take a long time and a lot of money. And you have people that are spending a significant amount of money. And when people spend money, they want results immediately. And, you know, especially with us battling with doing the other types of work, they get in the way of some of these restorations. And then you add on top, like, some of this stuff just takes a lot of time. You know, so it's,
and that's the restorations of Corvettes.
Yeah. And that's really the roots of where my dad started. He's been doing it, just like me. He started when he was a kid. My grandpa was a body guy, a paint guy. He was actually a teacher at a trade school. So my dad, same deal, kind of grew up in it. And he started, you know, Denny's Corvette Restorations, and he was intending to specialize in just restoring Corvettes. And then go ahead.
No, you started raising like some of the family tensions or things, and I'm sure our listeners are definitely going to be interested in navigating like family relationships.
For sure.
My dream car growing up was a Corvette Stingray.
And okay.
I used to always love watching, they have time-lapse videos of restoring old cars.
Yeah.
So that, I love this area. So what's your favorite Corvette?
I would say my favorite, my dad actually has one. It would be a 63 split window, just because of the rarity of it. And
what does it look? I'm beyond Stingray. I wouldn't.
So it would have been one of the earlier Stingrays. They kind of had that like older Jaguar look to them.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, they were pointy in the back and kind of, you know, they had the high fenders, you know, and they like kind of created that typical Stingray look. And then late 60s, they started calling them Stingrays. So, but that would be probably my favorite year. But I've worked on Corvettes for so long now that I don't necessarily have a desire to own one. I mean, I'll inherit one most likely, but I don't know if I'll ever take a big chunk of money out and go find one myself.
Even the newest ones, the newest ones.
The new ones they're awesome. We've done some work on them. And I actually have like a little side business, where I do a lot of custom painting, parts for the newer generations and mail them all over the world. But I mean, they're great. I'm an old car guy at heart. I'm a carburetor guy. You know, if any of your listeners know, you know, carburetor fuel injection, I'm old school with it. I have a 59 El Camino, a 62 Bel Air, and that's the big old metal Chevys is where I find my passion at. So
was that the one in Faster with The Rock?
I don't know if I saw that.
Oh, okay.
Now you've got Jonathan getting all excited about cars.
Well, you got my contact now, so anytime you got a question or anything, you know who to reach out to.
Yeah.
Okay, Sam, I'll let you bring it back.
Yeah, we'll bring it back in to the family, because the family business dynamic, as you were starting to say, you said your dad's doing all sorts of different things, and you're now trying to have conversations about maybe streamlining, but generally you talk about this is the job you guys, he's done his whole life, you guys have started to do your whole life. What does that feel like from a family business perspective, jumping into that and kind of making that your career and sort of the tail end of your father's career? What is the general sense now?
I really think the hardest part of it is just that it feels so natural. Just the day to day, you know, the jobs that we take on, everything just feels so normal. Most likely because, you know, I've been doing it for, you know, 20 years. My dad's been doing it for 50 years. My brother's a couple years shy of me because he's 4 years younger. You know, and it just feels normal. And I think that's the, where the problems come into play when something's normal to, you know, more than one person. You got, you know, your team, so to speak, the three of us, everything's normal, but we all have different ideas and different ways we want to take it. So that's where the butting heads comes in. And it's really hard to stray from what's normal because normal keeps the drama at bay. You know, if you stick to what you know and stick to what's normal, yeah, we might be, you know, overworking here, overworking there, doing this and doing that. And then at the end of the day, you sit back and look at it and you're like, what the hell are we doing? But bringing that up in conversation is difficult because it's always, you know, especially, you know, with my dad's side, he's older. He's been doing it for so long. It's, well, you know, it's been working this long. I've never had a problem with this or that. And it's, you know, trying to explain, I understand that it's been working this long and we've made it this far and we're staying afloat, but it doesn't mean that it can't be done better, more efficiently and easier on us, you know?
How much of a force is your dad? Like, is he still in charge or?
Yes. Yep. He's in charge. He's definitely got on board with us taking over some of the things and helping relieve some pressure. But you know, he started the business in 1991 and I forget the name of it. I read a book about the generation of people that started business in the early 90s and they look at their business as a child. So, you know, it's working my way in and my brother working his way in. It's kind of like prying teeth just because it's not just a building and a job to him. It's part of his life. It's part of his family. You know, it's part of all of our families. It's every day for all of us. You know,
that dynamic of it, if it being normal, accounts for so many of the failed businesses, the large businesses that couldn't manage a transition from a founder. So like, or a very strong CEO. So like Disney, Nike, there's so many. In fact, most businesses don't manage that very well. The transition of a strong presence, either a founder or a CEO.
Right.
The statistics are pretty, you know, not great. But if you could overcome that normal part and actually ramp up the tension,
right,
which sounds counterintuitive, then that tends to have a much better result.
Right. And for sure, there's definitely, I've learned over probably the past like 5 years, I've been all over the place as far as like the pressure I've been putting on. I thought, okay, maybe you kind of go like, I don't know if that's a proper term, like cold turkey, and just force a whole bunch of change at one time. And you know, I ended up looking like an asshole and causing a lot more problems. And we ended up backtracking in some things. So, you know, but this was me. I had the only education I had was at that point was just what I put together in my head of like, okay, how the hell do I do this? Because I never had any training in it. So over the, you know, the last couple of years, I've been up and down and slow change and fast change, and just kind of, you know, there was one point, I think it was when my dad had COVID 2 years ago. I went in the office. My brother had it at the same time, and it was me and one other employee. Basically went in and like ripped everything out of the office, threw out everything. I'm like, none of this chicken scratch anymore. We need to get it on, like, you know, the software on the computer, the management software, start leveraging that. And everybody, you know, we have a lot of customers that are friends and come into the shop and they're like, oh, your dad's going to be so mad when he comes back. And I was like gearing up for it. And he came back in, and after like a day or two of bitching, he got comfortable with it, and it worked, you know? So it's all just finding those things, you know, that work for you and your scenario, and making it work. It's just, you have to do that. You can't stay normal. You can't stay comfortable. Cause as soon as you do that, you end up your wheels start going backwards at some point.
Mm-hmm. And do you feel like the, you mentioned the need to stay normal or keep things level is because it also is your personal life. Do you feel like the conflict you guys have at work, when you say it spills over, what's the dynamic between you guys having tension at work and then that carrying over to your personal life?
So my brother, my dad, and me, we're very good at separating it, separating business from family. Now, obviously, you can't do that 100%, but I've seen other people in family businesses, they don't even sit down and talk to their family anymore because they couldn't do that. So we're very good at kind of separating family from business.
How do you do that? If I can interrupt, like, I think that's like, what tips would you have for people on how to make that
happen? I think it all really comes down to, you gotta be able to just separate it mentally. You have to commit to that. And I've had some friends say to me that I'm kind of like the glue of the me, my brother, and my dad. So sometimes I feel like a punching bag, but you kind of need to have someone in the three that can kind of back up a little bit and throttle back on some of the business stuff and cool down some of the drama, even if it's just kind of making a couple comments that makes it easier for somebody to ignore it for the weekend or so. But it's definitely, that part of it is draining. And it's draining for all three of us, but we have to do it. And that's part of the, like, the family business that a lot of people don't see. And they can't wrap their head around that, but it has to happen. And that's, you know, that's how we can move forward.
So someone in the group needs to be like a mediator type.
For sure. I feel like that definitely helps. I would assume that if you ask my dad and my brother that, I don't know if they would agree. But that's probably just because, I've been doing it for so long. I don't even know if me doing it is the right way to say it. It just comes natural to me, where I just kind of, I want everybody to get along. My dad's very similar that way. But I think those little traits of personality are kind of what, you know, keep us together, in the rough times, and we can still go down to the beach, have a family vacation and sit on the porch, drink some beers and have a blast, you know, even after having a Thursday and Friday that were absolutely horrible. And we were ready to, like, you know, put a bullet in each other's heads. You know, we could still go to the beach that Saturday and still have a good time. But
on this topic, especially, I almost wonder, because it seems very intuitive to say we should be separating our work life and our personal life. But I feel like, especially here at Business Therapy, we like to interrogate that, because your work life is your personal life. In a lot of ways, it's difficult to separate. And I imagine when you have a normal job and you don't like your boss, for instance, or you get in a fight, you can somewhat go home and not be triggered because you don't live with your boss or you don't see your boss on the weekends typically. But right. I feel like it's even more important with the family business. Instead of saying it'd be important to separate the two, to me, it would be, to integrate them would probably be the only way, because how can you, it's everything's so intertwined when your business is your family. And likewise, I would just question, and it's really a question to you, what do you think about integrating them more instead of separating them? It might help both sides.
Well, I think naturally in this scenario, everything is integrated. I think that when I say separation, you kind of have to pick certain things to separate. Just like if you have a, you know, a normal job and you can go home, you don't have to see your boss. You have, you know, you go into the weekend, your boss isn't there. Those are the things you kind of have to separate, where if you did see your boss after work and you did see your boss on the weekend, those things that would make that relationship and those times difficult, those are what you kind of have to pick out and separate. Leave the work there. The work's okay there. You know, everybody wants to, you know, have this mentality of like, you know, at the end of the day, you cut the work off and go into the rest of, you know, your night without any work, but it's not realistic, especially in a family business. So you just kind of have to separate and compartmentalize certain things just to keep the relationships going.
Is it leave the, like the topics of work, or is it leave maybe an argument that you're having at work?
I think it's mostly like the feelings of animosity. Like,
maybe it might be my heater. Let me see if I close this door if it helps. Is that it?
Cool. That was it.
Oh, sorry about that. All right.
Okay. Let's start from the beginning.
Yeah, there we go. So the animosity side of it is like, you know, the things when your boss says something to you and you, it lights you on fire. They're the things that deal with on that day. And you have to be strong mentally, because it is tough, but you have to take those things and say, okay, this is still my dad. This is still my brother. He's going to be here tomorrow morning. We have, you know, family vacations and things planned. You got to just drop it. Leave that at work. You know, we can still, we'll still go to the, you know, go on vacations and whatnot, or have dinner, and we'll still talk a lot about work. We talk a lot about work. But there's just certain things that we know, the three of us know, that it's a responsibility for us to keep the family together and friendly and looking forward to seeing each other, that we have to just pick certain things and put them in a little box, lock it up, and throw it in the ocean. You know what I mean? And that's what you have to do, you know? Mm-hmm. And sometimes they rear their head and they come back, and you go through phases of, you know, where you're like enraged, and you just have to find out how to squash it.
So you feel this boiling up volcano and you just tamp it down and smush it down. And that's the way to avoid.
It's not all sunshine and rainbows. I mean, it's definitely not. Maybe I'm making it sound too easy, because it's definitely a constant, you know, it's a constant labor to do that. But I feel like that's why a lot of family businesses fail and don't continue, because, you know, maybe sometimes it's just the personalities are too rough and it can't, it's not possible to do that. But for us, we've been able to do that now for a long time. You know, but it's not easy, and it's constantly there. And it's, I don't think when you have three people, especially like with me, my brother and my dad, we're all bullheaded. And that's, yeah, you add that into the mix, that makes it even more difficult. But at the same time, we're all bullheaded enough to force ourselves to, you know, cut those things out, to keep the shop going, to keep the family going, to stay together and stay tight, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, we can have a really rough week, and my dad's really big at Friday lunches. That's his favorite thing of the whole week, is going out to lunch on Fridays. And we can have a rough week and go out to lunch on Friday, and we just leave what was frustrating at the shop, and we just, you know, bring ourselves to the table and do our best to, you know, to keep it real.
And a quick follow-up to that then, because when a lot of people, it sounds like you've got these ways to manage tension, but for most people, if they weren't working with their family, if they had trouble with their boss on a consistent basis, or they didn't agree with the direction, they have the option of finding a new job or quitting. What's the dynamic for you in working in a family business of, hey, when things are tough for, let's say, a few months at a time, is the option, the way the family business is put together, that you would ever even consider leaving? Because that would also be sort of abandoning your family, I guess. If you could just talk about that dynamic a little bit.
Right. I mean, you more or less kind of nailed it there. It's been an option. My parents have always said that that was an option if it came down to it. I've recently had an offer to start my own shop with another, you know, group of friends that have, you know, are like-minded, same, you know, they do the same type of work. But it all comes down to what you said about abandoning family. I know 100% that I can't do that. I can't abandon my dad. I can't abandon my brother, my mom. You know, is stressful as it gets sometimes, and as hard as it is on me, and I'm sure them as well. I just can't, you know, I've had some really rough times. Everybody has rough times at work. I went through some really rough times, you know, in the family business, where I really thought about, like, Jesus Christ, I'll shovel shit at a farm instead of coming back to this. But it all comes down to, I can't abandon my family. And that, I think that's also a lot of the fuel for compartmentalizing things and separating things to keep things going and keep things friendly. Because going back to that, if you don't do that, now you're adding the constant animosity on top of the stress of, you know, knowing that I won't be able to sleep at night abandoning my family.
Do you feel that reciprocal, that everyone else feels the same? Like, nobody wants to abandon the family. So by extension, nobody would want to abandon you either.
I think for sure. I think, you know, me, my dad, my brother, we're all very, very different. So it's, and I don't know, I would have to ask them, if they felt that I kind of like wear it and they can pick up where I'm at and what I'm feeling, because I feel like I try to put that out there so they know where I'm at. I don't know if I do. But I have a very hard time like reading my brother and my dad sometimes, because, you know, obviously things get said, you can't read their minds. And, you know, sometimes someone will say something and it's like, how do you take it? How do you read it? And then it's, you know, frustration kicks in. It's hard to have more of a conversation. So I think we've all been there long enough and been through enough of the stress and the ups and downs that I think we're all definitely on the same page in our own ways. You know,
you haven't thought of doing a reality show, right?
you know, I hate those reality shows with the cars, because they cause us so many goddamn problems. You know, these people come in and they're like, hey, we got $100,000. We want this, you know, my Chevelle to look like this one we saw on TV. They did it in 2 weeks. Well, sorry, it's going to take us, you know, 3 years. Well, that's not how did they do it? Well, you know, they have a team of, you know, 30 people that are paid to be a well-oiled machine, to make that happen. And yeah, so
I was thinking more on the family dynamic side.
yeah. Well, I don't know. I mean, maybe that would be part of it though. We would have to be doing that, to get people to watch it, you know? but true. It's sometimes it definitely feels like, I don't remember if you guys or know if you guys remember, Orange County Choppers, like mm-hmm. the Tuttles. Sometimes it really feels like that. We're not throwing chairs and breaking walls, 'cause then one of us has to fix it. But sometimes like that's definitely a real thing. You know, that dynamic
for sure. Well, and there's so many interesting dynamics that you're explaining, and I'm sure a lot of people in family businesses go through this, but this, even just playing off that last conversation about how you feel you can't abandon your family, so you feel the sense of obligation. Does that ever translate to a feeling of being trapped, especially when things are tough? I imagine it's, you know, there's a lot of dynamics going on there.
Absolutely. My employee that we lost roughly a year and a half ago, he's one of my best friends. His name's Tyler. He actually went and started a company with a couple other guys called Hollywood Garage in town, and he's doing really well for himself. But he was my right hand man. My personality, his personality, you know, they jive real well. And I always envisioned that, you know, it was going to be me and him figuring out how to make everything work. And then, you know, my dad, and my brother would have their, you know, spots and always be there and fit in. And when he had left, it kind of just like, I had like a vision that just kind of disintegrated, you know, just vanished. And then I had to, you know, refigure things out. But during that time, I had a conversation with my mom. I said, you know, I said, I feel like I'm in a room right now. Somebody locked the door and threw the key away. Like, and I actually felt that way. And that was, that lasted for a couple weeks, maybe even a couple months, until it came back to me, you know, mentally trying to figure out, I have to go to work in the morning. I have to come home. I have a family to take care of. I can't drag that feeling with me. So I have to do something to change it. And I made some changes in my day to day. I started doing some things that allowed me to grow in different departments that I didn't consider before. And that kind of made that feeling has since went away. But it's definitely a real feeling. And I could see, you know, a lot of people in family businesses, they probably suffer with taking some of those feelings, you know, and having that all the time, you know, but for sure.
Do you talk about the future? Do you talk about like where each of you sees things going or how it should evolve?
As time goes by more and more, because up until a couple of years ago, it was just the three of us, you know, and the other employees just going in and working. And it was, we go back to the comfortable and normal. It was just so normal and comfortable. It was like, we know we're going to be doing this in 40 years or whatever. So we didn't really feel like we needed to talk about it. You know, and then you get some of those tensions, you know, form, and some come, some go. But they're always, you know, something's always there. And then it's, you know, I started listening to podcasts, listening to audiobooks, trying to educate myself in something to help me, you know, deal with it and whatnot. And you learn that you have to talk about those things, as uncomfortable as it is and as awkward as it is. You got to find ways to bring them up, and you have to have, you know, a vision. You have to have a goal. You have to have a long-term goal. You have to have a short-term goal. And when something's so comfortable and normal, and you sit back and look at it, you realize sometimes you don't even have those goals, or you used to, and you forget what they are, you know?
Yeah. And I would say strong communication is the foundation of strong relationships generally. And I'm starting there because I'll say I have a lot of admiration and respect for you and other people who are in family businesses, because even when I started working on my communication skills, communicating with my family members to this day can still be difficult. And for it's almost sure. easier to communicate with strangers, especially to practice articulating yourself. And at work, it's a good place. But I imagine it can be overwhelming trying to learn how to do professional and business communications at the same time navigating your family communications. But I think it is really critical. And like you say, having to open the conversation up over and over again. And sometimes you may, with a family member, you can open up a tough conversation and they just can't have it at that time. And it's easy to let it go, I think, and then not come back to it. But just especially right. when your business and your whole personal life's on the line, I think that's the key to staying conscious with it, which is, you know, there's something that's bothering you or you need to talk about. And even if you have to do it gently, you can't let it go. You can't let people off the hook. You got to have those conversations, because it's really the only way to have strong relationships, in my opinion.
Right. And you have to, you know, some of those things that come up where you're like, I need to have this conversation right now. And you go into it and you're like, okay, you know, dad's not ready for this conversation, or my brother Chad, he's not ready for this conversation. And sometimes you let it go. And by the end of the day, you know, okay, is he ready to have it now? And then you think, you know what? I'm not even ready to have that. Like, maybe that was so, I had frustration and stress build up. I don't even know how to have that conversation now, because it won't sound right without all the frustration and, you know, anger I had build up. And then you look at it and you're like, okay, maybe that was one that, we just don't have. Maybe we didn't need to have that one. You know, and it's more of like,
so you're conflict avoidant. So you need someone in the group who's conflict avoidant.
Yeah, I think so. And I think everybody has their own way of doing that. But that also kind of helps you weed through what's actually important to bring up and have real discussions about.
Well, and I imagine it's not even really conflict avoidance as much as with family members. You can start a very seemingly neutral conversation, but there's just so much personal history. I think it can probably get flared up very quickly. At least I know when I've worked with family members, there's more of a danger of that. And I think there's a good time to know, okay, this is going to catch on fire immediately, and maybe we should just put that on pause for a second. And then later, when everyone's cooler, we have a better opportunity to
for sure
work it out.
Yep. And same thing, you know, that goes to like, it might've set you on fire, but the conversation or the situation may not be worth something to set on fire, if that makes sense, you know? So it was, it, you stand back and you look at it, and you really got to kind of pick and choose your battles in that world.
Yeah, I would just caution that, you know, the thought that some things are not worthwhile, like all because you have a conflict or you talk through a conversation, it doesn't mean it needs to be explosive, or it doesn't mean that it will go as explosive as you think.
Right. Right.
The problem is, by not putting it out there, I'm going to come back to this. It does stay inside, and that energy, you know, it doesn't just evaporate on its own. I mean, you might be able to let something go or say, okay, I'm getting X in return for not, you know, making this fight or something like that. But I don't know that it needs to be an either or. I think you could still say, look, I'm going to say what I need to say. It may not have the impact I'd like it to have right now. And I can't control how other people behave, you know, but I will still put it out there, and then I'll, but it doesn't have to be a consequence, but expressing yourself and putting it on the table is very important, because otherwise people could interpret what you're not saying as saying something you don't mean to say.
Yeah. I can definitely relate to that happening for sure. And when you say it and put it like that, you're 100% right. And I'd be willing to bet that a lot of the problems that we have are because we do that. But it's tough, because we all have different ways of communicating and different ways of expressing that. And it's almost like we need to go to one of those break rooms with a bat and a couple TVs and just, all right, everybody take a bat and let's have at it here. Let's get it all out.
Yeah, but even if you frame something as, nothing's more important to me than this family, I am not going to do anything that's going to mess up this dynamic, but I do want to put this on the table.
Right.
So like, in other words, you limit the fallout from the beginning, and you make it clear to everybody that your objective is not to rock the boat or destroy something, but you just need to be heard. And that's a reasonable... You know, sometimes when you start with that, you might be surprised by, even if it's not heard in the moment, it's information that, you know, can have an impact later on.
Just to get it out so it's not festering.
Yeah.
Even if it pisses somebody off, at least.
And because if you're thinking of it, it's good for the business. In other words, you care about the business, you care about what happens. And so putting it out there, you're saying it's bad for the business if there's disharmony. But I would suggest that it's bad for the business if your ideas are not shared and put on the table for everyone else to contend with. And that also contributes to a certain comfort level that builds resentment later on if the things that you're thinking need to be done are not addressed. And then later on, it comes back to bite, you know? Yeah. So, and then who's that on? That's on you, because you didn't communicate.
Right. Well, I should have brought it up when it was there. Yeah.
And this is really a comment on honesty, which is so important when you're communicating, especially with family members. Because I think, Cody, to your point about, well, sometimes you bring something up and it might not need to be followed up on because your thoughts change or you are feeling angry in the moment. I think a lot of the discernment there is just about being really honest about, okay, does this bother me? And if you bring it up and you get shut down, if it still bothers you, you should pursue it again versus I'm just going to forget about this because I don't want to cause any more problems. But sometimes you bring it up one time and then maybe... you feel different and it isn't a problem. I just think it's even more important in those kind of conversations where you don't want to harp on it with other family members. Just be really honest about what you're feeling. And to Jonathan's point too, the festering, I think, is what really hurts people in their professional relationships, but is even more dangerous when you're letting things fester between family members, I imagine.
Right. Yeah, for sure. And I think it's kind of one of those things I might have been, with the original question, I might have been thinking more of on a smaller scale. Like, who the hell left the light on in the bathroom? Like, maybe just walk away from that one, you know? At the same time, in that scenario, those really small things, everything counts, you know? And what John said, like, it all stays inside if it doesn't come out. So obviously some of those, like, you know, leave the light on or whatever, you know, my dad will make comments about that. I guess getting it out is still ultimately better regardless of the scenario and how big or small it is.
You could check yourself and say, why do I care about this? You know, and if the reason you care about it is because you want something a certain way, but it doesn't necessarily improve anything for the business. Okay. That's one issue, but no matter how small it is, if it improves something for the business, it's worth saying.
Right.
You know, and checking yourself, saying like, I can't say it when I'm angry. And if I'm not angry anymore, why say it? Basically blocks you from giving, you have no permission to ever speak. So right. Like, you know, so in that case, I would say, I would imagine that when you think you're angry speaking, you probably don't sound very angry.
Yeah. Well, and also, okay. I think one just thing to throw in there, because what Jonathan's saying about the, it's good for the business. You may use this example of, hey, you didn't turn off the light in the bathroom as a seemingly unrelated business. Like, how does that relate to the business? But in general, I think asking the question, why does this annoy me? Because this is not even a business conversation, but when you're dealing with family and you're with them all the time, something might be annoying you, but it's not that something is annoying because you care about the light being left on one time. It might be because they don't listen because you gave them this feedback a week ago or yesterday, and they're just not respecting your feedback. Like, there's usually something deeper going on that's causing annoyance. And those are the harder conversations that you have to address. And even more important, I would think, to address with your family, because if there's something that's bothering you from a, they're not respecting your communication or your boundaries or your professional, the way you want to do things professionally, those are the tough conversations. And I think a lot of family businesses falter because that's hard. It's almost like doing therapy with your family while you're at work. But I think that's what we need to do to be conscious, especially in our family businesses.
Right. And you know, hearing you say that kind of makes me think maybe there's a lot more stuff there that I do. I don't even recognize that. I just experience it and soak it in and just let it go. I think I'm just maybe, that's more of a personal problem for me, is just, I need to start getting that stuff out, and it's become normal for me to do that. So I don't even recognize it anymore. I think you're 100% right. And something I definitely have to work on.
Yeah. And it's a problem. Most people have it. I mean, like, communication, yeah. I think everyone has a dynamic like that somewhere in their life.
Yeah.
And you certainly don't want to be someone who's just always annoyed at everything, you know, like,
right.
But again, even with the light, like, the end result might be that the light keeps going on, you know, like, in other words, like, and at some point then you, or was left on, you know, and at some point you make a decision about letting something go or not. But even just putting it out there that, you know, let's say the issue is it's not respecting you, you know, or whatever ultimately the issue is, putting it out there will change the energy.
Right.
So it's not necessarily this, you don't need to change something in order to make it worth, you know, for it to be worthwhile. I think everyone thinks the ultimate objective of conflict is to, you know, get what you want or something like that. But sometimes it's just to change the energy that's going on in any relationship. And just putting it out there, you change the energy. Even if you don't get a specific result, it reveals itself in other places. So,
maybe open up future communication, future exactly. conversations.
Yeah. And if then, I then say you start seeing, and then everyone can start seeing patterns. Oh, there's a lot, but a bunch of places where people are not, you know, being respectful or something like that, you know, right. Like, so, but keeping it inside, for the goal of harmony, when you are one of three people and don't feel the harmony, like, which, what, that's not a victory, you know, like, that's not real harmony. So, and I don't mean to stir up the pot, but I am going to approach you.
No, you're the reality, you're 100% show, right.
So maybe, yeah. I am.
No, you're 100% right. I mean, you know, and it's one, the communication's definitely very important. And it's, I feel like it's one of those things that, going back to just being not normal and comfortable, you get comfortable not communicating because you're not, there's not fires going on all the time, but the fire's still somewhere, you know, it just might not be in a different spot. You know, if you have that conversation, you put that fire there, at least it's there and not inside, you know?
Yeah. And as Sam always likes to say, you are the business. So, like, the business, it's not like this entity distinct from you. You're part of that entity. So your feelings are part of the business, you know, right. Like, so, you know, it's only if it's only about you that it becomes a problem. But if it's the reverse, you know, now you got to interrogate it.
Right. Yep. For sure.
Yeah. Well, we've talked a lot about various tensions and family dynamics that go with running a family business. We appreciate you coming on the show and being so open and authentic. It's been a great inside look to what is a very intimate family business that you're a part of. And I'm sure a lot of people who struggle with family business issues have probably really appreciated your perspective. Before we close the conversation, do you have any general advice or last thoughts for anyone who might be in a similar position in their family business? Any guidance from your now almost 20 years of doing it yourself?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. If there's, somebody's listening to this that grew up in a similar way that I did, where it was kind of all they knew and what they knew they were going to be doing, those frustrations and stuff, they can build up. And I've just learned recently that, like, there are ways to alleviate that. There are people that are willing to help. For instance, you guys. There are books you can read, podcasts you can listen to. Just get out of that, room that you're in. Open the doors and look for things that can help, and get out of the comfort zone. Because the more I've got out of the comfort zone with things at the shop with my family, ultimately the better things get. I think it's very important, reach That's out, great. Get the help.
That's a know? Great, yeah. Great insight.
Yeah. And with that, for those of you listening, thanks for tuning in. We'll be on next week. So if you have your questions or comments, we'd love to hear from you. Otherwise, we'll talk to you on Business Therapy next week. Thanks, everyone.
All right. Thanks, guys.